Hey, everyone. This week on Business Therapy, Jonathan and I are going to discuss an interesting article that we came across about the forever labor shortages that we're expecting coming up, especially as the demographics skew. The older demographic is leaving and retiring the workforce, and we just haven't had as many people to replace them. Our fertility rate has been down in this country for several decades, so it's creating an interesting demographic shift. We're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss what it means for the labor force and how that it calls us to be more conscious and how our conscious approach can really help you navigate some of the things that are coming. And with that, we hope you join us for this episode of Business Therapy. Don't miss it.
Welcome to Business Therapy, the podcast that explores the intersection of business and mindfulness. In this show, we bring you stories and expert insights on how mindfulness can help you succeed in your career and lead a more fulfilling life. Let's talk about it on Business Therapy.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Business Therapy. This is episode 77. I'm Sam Droshack, and as always, I'm here with Jonathan Adams.
Hey, everyone.
And today we're not having a guest on the show. We came across a very interesting article called The Forever Labor Shortage from The Insider. And we'll make sure that we post the information so you can find the article yourself, too, with the episode. But we thought we'd take an episode to discuss it because I think it's good every once in a while to take a step back and look at what's happening more broadly in the world around us and how it's going to shape what's happening now in the business ecosystem, but also going forward. To us, you know, being aware and being aware of what's going on outside of yourself is a big part of being conscious. So the article, I think, really spoke to me. And Jonathan, what did you think of the article?
Well, you know, I've actually studied labor shortages and the factors involved for quite some time now, just relating to old work that I used to do. So I found it very interesting because I've read so many of them over, you know, so many decades. So, yeah, I'm excited.
How does this one compare? Does it align with what you've been reading, or does it feel like this is new information?
Well, I think I've read articles similar to it, in the past, you know, so I would say, cutting to the chase, demographics definitely would be the one factor that I'd always be looking for to see if there's long-term labor shortages. But the problem with generally with labor shortages or data about it is that it's used for such political purposes that there is no such thing as a study or an article or anything that doesn't have a political orientation in mind. And certainly will be used toward that end. So when you think of, like, you know, the number of people that don't have work, that's always going to be a highly political number because it's either supporting a candidate or it's arguing for this or that immigration policy, you know, for more skilled workers or fewer, or it's used for labor contracts and labor union negotiations. So it's you know, all this time, I found that it's really hard to have a key takeaway. And the other problem is it's always a lagging indicator because you're looking at an impact from the economy. You're not looking at a primary problem. So when even if it's saying that there's going to be labor shortages, and by the way, you can see just as many articles that say it's a myth, you know, look for myth labor shortages. You'll see, like, you know, endless amount. But even if you can, because it's a lagging indicator, by the time you do something about it, it's no longer today. You know, that famous Heraclitus, if I can never say his name, phrase, no man walks into the same river twice because the man will have changed and the river will have changed. So by the time we would do something about a labor shortage one way or the other, the conditions are no longer the same. So think about, you know, in no time, let's say AI is going to replace a bunch of different jobs. And suddenly, you know, where there's a shortage and how there's a shortage, you know, changes dramatically overnight. And I found that to be the case over and over and over. Every time there was a prediction about labor shortages, and even if it was in fact true, the conditions had changed and it was no longer relevant what I might have thought from a policy perspective to do to change it.
So then before we dive into the beef of this particular article, and I'll also take a minute for those of you listening without having read it to summarize it shortly, but your opinion going into this is that like similar to other pieces you've read, you wouldn't put a huge amount of stock in this because it also is kind of politicized and it has to be by its nature. And also the relevancy is hard to act on, really.
And I think the latter part is more the important one. That so let's say I'm looking to get into the labor market. You know, the fact that there's shortages or not shouldn't change whether or not I'm looking to get a job or, you know, how I would go about it. My advice would be the same ultimately.
Right.
So, you know, that they're really, or for a company, you know, what if there's going to be labor shortages, hire more than you need right now. You know, like there's, it's very, very hard to act on it in any logical way. I've definitely seen companies do a lot, and this is not necessarily for labor shortages in general, but for certain positions, look to get relationships with universities or start their own, you know, teaching program or something like that in order to be able to make sure that there is a supply of skills that they might need. But that's very targeted and that's not a general kind of reaction.
Right. Yeah. So putting the advisement aside and what does this mean aside for a second, for those who haven't read it yet, the main thrust is that we're coming into a time where there's just, I think it's not opinion. The baby boomers are retiring and our fertility as a country has gone down significantly since the last several generations. So there's just going to be less people available. And I don't think that's, well, let me pause there, especially Jonathan, based on how we started your comments. That's not debatable, right? I mean, we're just going to have less people in the workforce.
It's not debatable. And the worst problem is that even that data is so political to say, because it has direct implications to Social Security, to welfare, to any program that relies on a pyramid scheme of some sort, you know, where the current people working are the ones paying for the, you know, the old benefits. So, but yes, I think demographics are very, very clear. At least in the United States, we're blessed in that it's not as severe as in many other countries.
Yeah. Well, and that's, and I'll throw a stat from the article. So in the 1960s, there was the average fertility rate was 3.7 babies per woman. And then by 1975, it had already reduced to 1.8, which is pretty significant. And then I dare say there's no numbers in this particular article, but it's only been holding stagnant or going down from there, with reproductive management being more ubiquitous and more commonplace, you know, in the last few decades. And people are just economically and socially, I think, having less children, having children later. So we're kind of finally at this interesting time in this last century where the baby boomers, which is this massive influx of people that have run this country for a while, are finally retiring. And they're finally retiring in droves. COVID was an accelerant and pushed a lot of people into retirement. So the workforce is certainly changing and there's just going to be less people in the labor pool, which, and again, for whatever reasons, politically, practically, it's just going to be a fact. And I think we are, if you're aware of it, you're going to start to see it in whatever role you're in, if you're somebody who's going to be remaining in the workforce, at least for the next few years.
Yeah. And I should say, you know, like people like Elon Musk say labor shortages, you know, that's the biggest problem that business is going to face, you know, so this is the data definitely indicates that we're going to have labor shortages. But again, I don't know to what extent that necessarily changes behavior, because at the same time, we're saying we're going to lose all these jobs because of AI. So like, you know, the conditions are going to be, you know, can that 1.7 person, you know, do the work of the 3.2, you know, or whatever it is, you know, we become that much more empowered or enabled. I would say that's somewhat likely.
Yeah, I agree. And just like COVID was a catalyst for massive digitization of the workforce, not having all this labor is probably going to be a massive, like another catalyst for automation and increased digitization, like you just mentioned. And now we're getting into the let's discuss what we think kind of part of this, because I agree that you read an article like this and you can make any claim you want. Oh, this is going to mean that people are going to be paid higher wages. This is going to mean that AI, this is, you know, it really then it's such a complex, I think, situation. It'd be impossible to look at the numbers, like to your point, Jonathan, and say, okay, we're going to have, you know, minus two people for every, we're going to have one person for every three people that we had a decade ago coming up. That's going to do X, Y, and Z. But I do think it's going to be a much more complex picture. And I do think automation, whether there were going to be people or not, automation was naturally going to push them out of the workforce either way. So this is actually almost a, you know, a boon in some ways that we're going to have less people around. I think it's going to make it truly, because you're seeing it now with all the layoffs and the things that are happening. People are not trying to backfill roles when people leave because they're trying to use that as an excuse to leverage the tools and the technology that's available. So I think that's just going to continue, would be my number one estimate.
Well, there was a study done on minimum wage and its impact on various industries. And there was one specifically on a car wash industry. And basically, when there was a minimum wage law enacted, and I forgot which state, it made it impossible to retain the number of staff that was there. And what you saw was this massive and very rapid automation of all these car wash entities, because it forced the issue. Now, this is not an argument for minimum wage or no minimum wage or anything like that, you know, without getting into that whole debate. What it is, though, is saying is that if, to Sam's point, this has been proven multiple times, that if you squeeze the supply of something, alternatives are found, and usually in the form of automation.
Yeah, and now more than ever, the ability to automate is increasing. Every day, as we've seen, you know, in the news with the ChatGPT phenomenon and everything else happening, I think that's only going to keep going in the way it goes. So I definitely think it's a safe assumption to say for those industries that are going to lose a lot of headcount, people are going to look to automation first to solve that problem. They're not going to look to pay people twice as much and like compete with everyone else for the limited supply. I don't think that's that would not be my estimate for sure.
Yeah, along with the demographic trend of having a lot more people who are in the retirement pool, because people, you know, thankfully are living longer and there being fewer babies, you also have people staying in the workforce a lot longer. There are various, like I said, this is such a complex issue that to assume in any which way that the conditions today will be the same factors in any period of time in the future it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, one could say what industries are going to be impacted the most by this. But even now, and maybe this is a little bit futuristic of me, with the way automation is going, you could just posit that where a human body is still absolutely essential will obviously be the most impacted, assuming that the labor is just, you know, one person is one person in every industry context. But even that I would challenge, because I think, like you said, if people are forced to automate, automation is able to take on a lot now. And I really can't think of anything. What?
Explain that again. I didn't follow the person.
Like we said, with the complexity, if you're talking about an industry, just the top of my head, like if you think about trucking or construction or right now things that robots can't do, and you're saying, okay, well, there's going to be less bodies to do that work, but it could be that all the available bodies aggregate into those industries because it's where all the jobs are. So we can't say that, okay, one person is one person, you know, in the future, because we don't know exactly what type of labor might be leaving. The labor pool was the comment I was trying to make, and that might have not come across very well. But assuming that we just have less bodies for all these roles, even construction, trucking, all these things. Well, I guess trucking is kind of a bad example because they've been trying to automate that with driving, you know, driverless cars now. That's been kind of in the news. But I think I'd be challenged to think of a single industry that relies on human labor solely and has no opportunity for better automation, better process. So I can't really think of an industry or a particular part of the market that's going to be particularly in trouble. I think everyone's going to get more creative and start using the tools to see where can we use technology and not use people. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that one.
Well, I think either because the importance of the broader skill set of the individual, you know, like that's one reason, like either because of that reason or because of changes that will occur as a result of, you know, the AI revolution or anything like that, the individual will have to have a broader range of capability on average, you know, and a broader flexibility. And I think simultaneous to this, interestingly, this phenomenon of the, you know, pressure on labor is also the pressure on news or information. And any industry that has information as its central point, you know, either curating it or presenting it or giving it to people, I think those are going to be under extreme pressure because the confidence that people have in in where they get the news, or the disaggregation of where people are getting their any information that they're getting and how they're learning and and everything that goes associated with it is going to lead to huge disruption there. I mean, we're seeing it already to a large extent, but what I think is harder to predict is the knock-on effect. So when I say anything with information at its core, I think that includes marketing. It includes any area of information at all, because how we get our information and its connection to other things. So for example, the fact that people are spending so much of their time on social media or getting their news from alternative sources means that if I had to make a big splash from a marketing perspective, I'm much more likely to look at an influencer than I am to get a commercial on a news station, because it's the impact of it is obviously going to be so much more dramatic from the influencer. That's a dramatic change in that entire process associated with marketing, for example. And, so I don't want to, I can go on and on, through the industries, but it's this disaggregation that's going to have a great effect.
Well, and I think it's an apt point, and it, to me, it introduces a more complex inferred part of this conversation, which is even the idea that there's less people and it's going to form a labor shortage and it's going to impact X, Y, and Z mechanically is almost like a baby boomer concept that's also leaving the market. Because what you're saying and what I think you're going to find if you really challenge every aspect of what's happening here is the people who are coming into the workforce, the younger generations that are coming up, they're so different from what we have now and the way we conceive of work and the people who are running the show. I think the bigger question to ask when you read an article about like this is not how is this going to disrupt everything that's been built by the baby boomers the last two or three decades? It's now that they're getting out of the way, how is work going to materially change? Because that's what we're really going to see, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think, as with any disruption, there's a lot of destruction innovation that goes as part of it. And unfortunately, a lot of the pushback that I'm seeing in the younger segment of the workforce right now is a wholesale pushback on anything to do with baby boomer generation, which also includes, submitting to a collective on some level, and playing a certain role. And I'm seeing just this whole industry centered around the I that is not sustainable. So it's like it's very, very, very much me, which is, again, there's a lot of good things about it because it's being in touch and, it leads to a lot of mindfulness. But it also makes the productivity not as possible.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how that settles. In a way, in this moment, I see it as the way business has been done for the last few decades, which is really driven, from the almost this industrial machine level mindset where everyone's a cog in the machine. That is kind of de-individualizing the person. And almost you see now the younger generations, they're really swinging too far the other direction as almost compensating for that. But I think a lot of that idea is leaving with the baby boomer generation that's now retiring, that people should just show up to work and they should just grind it out and give their life to the society and the machine.
Yeah. We hope.
I think you, but like you said, I think we're already seeing it pretty unequivocally that young people don't prescribe to that mentality. And even if they're going too far the other direction, when they're given room to breathe and they're not being pressured so much to just show up and be loyal and do the things that they were taught their whole life, that should moderate itself. That would be my guess. That would be my forecasting, which is like you said.
I hope so. But anytime there's a demographic shift, again, like you always have two sides of that coin. So there's the labor, we're talking about the labor aspect, but that security net, that comes at the end, that's going to collapse. I mean, there's just, it's unsustainable, politicians don't want to talk about it or face the reality, but so this general idea of what I should be entitled to in this world or what I should have coming to me, unfortunately, I actually think the baby boomer generation destroyed it for everybody, So like they actually, the world is in a much tighter spot now than, it was before, and it keeps increasing because there's a lot more debt. There's a lot more unfunded mandates and that's going to create a lot of harsh realities.
Well, the world they built is what they're still, as they're being pushed into retirement, is what they're still clinging to, in a way. We don't have any presumption as people. And also, when we're talking about this, it's not as if baby boomers are in the workforce now and they're going to be gone tomorrow. It's just going to be a slow evolution and transition of thought and mindset shift.
If I go back in time, like, everyone's always coming from a much worse scenario that came before. I mean, like, the human history of evolution, it's not like everyone showed up today and like, oh, we're going to make it good. Like, every time that's been the attempt, you know, like, conditions 100 years ago were pretty rough, 200 even rougher, 300, you know, even rougher. And I think every generation is always trying to maximize, you know, the potential with what it's working with.
Generally, I agree with that. But I would say I think this is a unique time in history because the time scale is accelerating exponentially. You know, I think there was a long time there where, like you said, everyone is trying to do better than their forefathers and like improve. But now I think the pressure, like the difference in which the workforce could look now, if we didn't have forces that were more conservative, keeping it the way it was, the delta, I think, is getting a lot bigger, if that makes sense, because things like the younger generations are so much more different being raised on technology and being raised in a web connected universe than their parents' generation were, that it changes. There's so much a bigger tension there.
Yes, but their capacity to be distracted is so much greater. The capacity to focus inward is so much greater. Like, so I agree with you. Like, in other words, I'm excited. I should start. I'm excited with where we are right now, and I'm excited with the potential. But I guess let me shift a different gear for a second. Change, no matter how perfect or how opportune or how correct, takes a lot of time. And even in a very shortened time scale, because there are always two factors at play. One is any system will absorb, I don't know, 30% waste at all times, even when it's really humming along, there's like 30% waste. So like, there's a lot of room to continue bad ideas, processes and bad intentions for that matter. And it's very hard to figure out which are which while there's a shift taking place. So serves as a stopgap against a lot of change at any given time. And then there's also huge cost, and society never figures out well how that cost gets apportioned at any given time. And people resist that cost even when it makes sense. So all I'm saying is that that there are dramatic changes even that I can think about in technology past 10, 20 years, like things keep moving fast, but how it actually affects decisions I would make today. There's a lot that says that, unfortunately, a lot will be the same in not so long from now.
Well, this is where I have some disagreement, because I think what's actually changing as the generations are shifting is that ability to change is what's changing. And that, I think, is challenged now more so than it's ever been in human history, which is the younger generations are growing up and they are raised into a time where change is their existence, right? Things change faster, things iterate faster, and their minds are wired to be more malleable and less like try to look for less firm footing. Like you said, in a way you could characterize it as they're more distracted. And there is a serious question of spiritual and consciousness and wholesomeness that's being born out of this, but that's like a separate conversation. I do think in aggregate, as the population and the working population particularly is more open to change and agile change versus waterfall, you know, like that whole evolution in project management is kind of speaking to this. People are learning to change faster and more effectively, which means our society and our businesses as a whole should want to change. Like, we shouldn't be dragging and holding all that cost and thinking like, oh, there's all these great things, but change happens slowly. I do think we're going to start seeing change happen more rapidly. And I think this change, you know, we're not talking about labor shortages anymore. It's almost a red herring, which is, when the labor shortages appear, the demographics are going to shift and things are going to start evolving faster, is my guess.
And I'm hopeful, but there's a limitation, and that's human. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that any optimization of the system, so to speak, is going to amplify the problems that a person has. You know, yeah. and we're going to keep being limited by that to some degree until people become a lot more mindful as a whole and have objectives that are a lot more value-adding and productive for all of society than for the individual.
I agree. And I think it's happening. Like, you know, you say that you're hopeful, but I see it already in younger people. They're just wired differently, you know, and I think a lot of the skepticism about whether they can do it or not, you know, I would almost accuse you of having a more conservative outlook. That's what a lot of people have. It's kind of that balance, right?
Right. You would expect me to have a more conservative. So I guess, let me say, I'm hopeful, but I'm not when there are limitations on it and it goes through the different cycles, I'm not as exercised about it.
Right.
So I actually think what we're heading for is a little bit more destructive for a period of time as a necessary part of the evolution to get something more constructive.
Yeah. Well, let me summarize this piece this way. If I can, you can always rebut, but the whole question about consciousness and change readiness, I think they're pretty much matched up. You know, when we talk about being a conscious person is always, you try to remain more in the present. And when you remain in the present, change, it doesn't exist, right? It's just everything is what it is. So the more present we become as a society and the more conscious we become as people, you're not going to have this resistance to change that's inherent. And like people look at that as a known quantity. I think that's going to have to go down. So as we become more conscious as a people in a society, change is not going to be considered this big, scary thing. It's just going to be how we live. Like everything is going to be evolving more rapidly and people are going to be not slowing things down quite as much.
Right. So under this theory, I would expect that as a whole, people will be healthier physically as they get older. Like that, I would expect obesity to be down. I would expect physical conditioning to be much higher because that's a sign of mindfulness, right? So, but I'm not seeing that yet. Why? And I think part of the reason is, even though there's so much amazing information out there, our ability to consume the information and use the information that's healthiest for us is harder when there's so much more information. But again, the ability to be distracted and not have to be mindful is much greater than it used to be.
Yeah.
So the potential is so much higher now, but it's going to express itself a certain way at a certain percentage of the population, just going on based on history.
Yeah, I agree. And I would also say, just from my perspective on that point, there's a lot of growing pains we're going through as a species right now because of everything happening, because of the advanced technical, social, cultural evolution that's going on right now that we've never seen before. The connectivity, just like this worldwide consciousness is forming. And like you said, there's going to be a lot of people struggling with it because there's no precedent for it. And I think we're seeing that. But generally, we're also just seeing a lot of positive evolution. And I think if we had a call to action for this conversation we're having in this episode, like we started, what do young people do to fight these trends? Or like there's all these worrying trends. Are there labor shortages? Are AI taking over all our jobs? What's happening? It's the same advice we're always going to give, which is you've got to be conscious with yourself in this moment and say, what brings you joy? What are you passionate about doing? And really cultivate that. Don't try to be somebody else to get ahead of the curve or get ahead of all these terrible things coming down the way or try to dodge things that you can't see. You got to really, now is the time. You have to be ready for change. You have to be a more conscious individual. You have to engage in things that you find productive and give you joy. And that's how you're going to participate in society. And there will always be a place for that in society until there's no society, is what I would say.
And I'll encapsulate that in the idea that know your why. Know why you're doing something. One of the most destructive things that the last generation did, I would say, is make people not question it. Like you said, come into work mindless and have a goal of retirement or whatever it is without really a meaningful why. Know what your purpose is. Now, that doesn't mean you need to, like, you're 15, 16, 17, 18, why do I do whatever I do? No, even if you don't know your why writ large, at least have an idea of why you're doing whatever you're doing. Because that frees you up to not worry about the how you're going about it, which is where people have to be a lot more flexible. You have to be, what we would always argue for in the old generation, it was, I have a bias to action. And the reason I always resisted that is because the action was disconnected from a meaningful why. So they'd be acting and it was just a lot of a waste. But if you're conscious then you should always be acting. And because that allows you to iterate very fast. And then you don't feel like you're even thinking because you're incorporating it in real time constantly. So we believe that you should have a bias to action, but not disconnected from knowing exactly why you're doing whatever you're doing.
Yeah, a bias to conscious action. And sometimes conscious action exactly. demands that you don't act. Abstaining from action is an action also.
100%. And you could even, and that, but that's also exactly. And that's a decision in and of itself. The yeah. other thing that I would say is that as things change fast, people become much more risk averse. Ironically, when that's the time they have to be the most risky, because if you have no idea what the future holds, trying to take action based on predicting against it is the worst. So I would say the more you know why you're doing something, the less you'll be influenced, because you should always be acting with an intention to achieve, to succeed, to add value, to toward something. You should never be acting against failure. You should never be acting to try and avoid something. So when people are taking classes now or trying to learn and they're saying, oh, I'm going to learn something so that way I don't end up without a job. That is the worst way to go about something, because you don't know what the future holds and it's not a very inspiring or energizing goal. You should be saying, okay, if I don't know what the future is, what's the best thing to do? Learn how to learn. Learn how to incorporate information. Learn how to be mindful and control your emotions, but accept them and be able to take healthy choices next. Those are the kinds of things that I would recommend, but not starting to try playing it safe or whatever that looks like for people, because that's not conscious action.
Yeah. And in a way that points to, as I summarize our article discussion here, it points to what you started, which was that these conversations, this article, it's almost always a test of how conscious and mindful can you be in this moment? Because in a way, you're never going to be able to tell the future. There's no difference now than it was 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Articles like this are fun to stimulate your thinking because the demographics are changing. There's no question about that. But it's not like whole labor. I don't expect labor shortages to wipe out industries, to completely disrupt this or that. People are going to want what they're going to want. And companies are going to provide what people want in increasingly creative ways. And we're evolving as a society. We're evolving as a people. But that's always been the same. We can talk about the pace of change. We can talk about the radical changes in technology and the way people are raised. But when you're just being a mindful person and you're engaged in this moment, and like Jonathan said, focusing on learning to learn, learning to engage with life in a meaningful way, it really doesn't matter what's happening around you, because in a way, everything's going to be different coming up, but everything is always going to be different. And in that way, everything is always the same. So that may seem a bit confusing, but there's no need to worry. This is mostly just a fun exercise. And, you know, we're going to see some cool stuff happening, and change is fun, but also change is living. And we all just are going to evolve, and we're going to do the best we can. And just being ready for that, not trying to hedge against it, is going to help you go along with it. To try to prepare for it is really resisting the change. And I think a lot of hopefully what we get across, and this is my final thought here, is that, you know, don't resist what's coming, because it's the resistance that causes you pain. And that's one of the foundations of just being a conscious and accepting individual.
I'll end with there's a scene in Kung Fu Panda, the animated movie with Jack Black.
A classic.
Shifu. Shifu, when he ran in going, there's terrible news. Master, and the master said, there's no such thing as bad news. There's only news. And that is definitely, I believe that. Like, so even if you see any information, it's just data to take in. Now, of course, unfortunately, in that scene, it was that the tiger, I can't believe I forgot all the names, escaped. And then Master Uruguay goes, yes, that is bad news. but the point is still valid in that everything's just news.
Yeah. And with that, thank you for joining us for episode 77. If you haven't read the article, I would encourage you to read it. And my call to action to you guys who are listening this week is see how it makes you feel and why. And just know that I think Jonathan's point is the real takeaway from this episode, that if you're reading the news and you're reading articles like this, it's always going to make you feel some way. So how does this make you feel? And how can you kind of process that in a healthy way? Because you're going to start seeing a lot of articles like this. A lot of people are going to be forecasting doom and gloom. But has it ever really been that different? and we're all still doing okay. So try to take it to heart this week, and hopefully we'll see you next week on Business Therapy.